Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Is Hurricane Hotline on FM 104.3 WQAM. An in-depth look at the Miami Hurricanes. Presented by Williamson Cadillac.
Williamson Cadillac. Experience the South Florida lifestyle in a new Cadillac. From Miami's luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Welcome to the Hurricane Hotline, everybody, as we come to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, site of the ACC basketball tournament. Coming up on the show, University of Miami head coach Jay Lucas joined us momentarily to reflect back on the Hurricanes' regular season, also looking at the ACC tournament. And also on the show, Danny Rabinowitz joins us with Alex Dono as Dono takes a look at University of Miami football and the portal and recruiting and all of those things coming up. On Thursday, it's Miami in the quarterfinals. Tip-off will be at 2:30. We'll be on the air at 2 o'clock. Hurricanes in the quarterfinals of the ACC basketball tournament after going 24-7 during the course of the season. Right now, join us, Hurricanes head coach Jay Lucas. All right, with University of Miami head coach Jay Lucas on the eve of the ACC basketball tournament. Actually, it's already underway, but for the University of Miami, Hurricanes playing on Thursday at 2:30 against either SMU or Louisville. And as we tape this show, we don't know who the opponent will be just yet, but we'll get around that in a moment. With Hurricanes head coach Jay Lucas. Well, coach, first of all, congratulations. A year ago, Miami was 7-24. A year later, the opposite, 24-7. Quite a turnaround. Congrats on that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, but a lot of it, and most of it always, like anything, goes to the players. You know, they're the ones that go out and execute. They're the ones that pull it together, and we got a good group this year. So I was just excited to coach them.
I was looking at your players in flight up here. Everybody has a Miami jersey on. I thought to myself, that's probably one of the bigger challenges right off the bat. How do you get them to play for the name on the jersey rather than the name on the back of the jersey? How do you get them to play for the school?
Yeah, you know, the first thing is just you talk about playing for each other. Mm-hmm. And playing for one another, and by doing that, you end up playing for the university and having pride. And I think a big part of it was also getting a bunch of guys who were from the state of Florida, especially in this first year, to establish a culture and establish my tradition and what it'll look like. And I felt like you needed people from the state of Florida, from South Florida, if you could. That automatically builds in a pride. That's hard to find this day and age with the new portal and everything.
How do the players connect the dots on if we sacrifice for each other, play with each other, it's for the greater good? If we find success through the record, then we all have success.
Yeah, it's daily conversations and it's daily talks and it's telling them the value of winning and how winning helps everybody but also helps yourself, you know, and so we had a few guys be able to get all conference awards, and we had people get recognition in that sense, and this all comes from winning, and it takes care of itself. So by doing that and getting lost in that, everything else and everything you want comes with it.
All conference recognition, Malik first team, Trey second team, Ernest all defensive team, Shelton, not on the freshman team, but I voted for him.
Yeah.
And coach, you should have won Coach of the Year. I voted for you also for Coach of the Year. So you had the Miami vote, but you did have a first team All-ACC player, who I also thought could have been comeback player of the year.
Yeah. You know, I'm just proud of those guys and happy for them. you know, especially going out your senior year to get those kind of recognitions, like you're saying, with Malik being first team, Trey second team, Ernest all defense. And, you know, the ACC had a great class of freshmen this year. I guess my one asterisk I would say is they need to have a freshman team and a newcomer team. And the freshman team should be guys who actually come out of high school. And the newcomer team can be everyone else, you know. And that's not a knock on anybody. It just thinks with where we are now, there needs to be something that's revisited. Because I do believe Sheldon is one of the best pure freshmen that were in the ACC this year. But there were a lot of really good ones that were out there, too.
Our listeners might not understand this, but there were some freshmen that – we're all freshmen, but they're 22 and 23 and 24 years old.
Yep, and they've been playing professional basketball for 6 years. And although they are classified technically as freshmen, they shouldn't be considered freshmen. And they should have had, there should be one more team, just a newcomer team. And that should be for transfers and people like that.
Yeah, I have a hard time sorting out voting for someone who's 23 years old as a freshman. Wildly successful first year for you as head coach. Let's talk about that for a moment. Some of the things you thought about coming in as a head coach. I mean, you understudied under some great head coaches, and you're the son of a coach. So what were some of the things that you took from all those people that you were able to use this year?
I mean, everything. Every moment. You know, you always prepare yourself or try to prepare yourself for this job, because this is a job I always wanted, was to be a head coach. And then you get in these different moments and these different instances, and you just you just go back to people you worked for and people you played for, and it gives you a better understanding of what they were saying and how they were doing it and how they were delivering it. So, you know, I would go back on everybody, I guess, I pull from, but I kind of have to make it my own and put my own spin and twist on it. But the messaging and the meaning behind it is always the same.
I've watched the way this thing's evolved through the years with coaches and scouts. I think for a long time, there was a tendency to tell players what they can't do.
Yeah.
And now maybe that's changing a little bit. Where did you find the sweet spot on in terms of what to tell players? The positive things, but you also have to get across some things they can't do, but it's more of an emphasis of what they can do, because it seems to me you've pulled out the best of the players.
Yeah, you know, a big part of it is just being honest with them, you know, and being able to coach them with honesty. And also empowering them in the same sense of where they don't feel like they have to look over their shoulder, but they also know they're being held accountable to a certain standard. And I think that's a big part of it now. And giving them as much confidence. My job is giving them confidence and answers when they go out there to play, so they aren't thinking so much. So I try to keep that in mind. And, you know, a big part of it, and I find this to be true in everything, but a big part of it is you got to have strong relationships, and you got to try to build strong relationships. And that starts just with the time spent with the guys.
Yeah. Are there things, you were a player, are there things that you thought of when you were a player and you said, man, if I ever become a head coach, I am not doing that to a player?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You always think of that. You always have that. Those thoughts that always go through your mind, because you're in certain situations and you know how it made you feel. So if it made you feel that way, you know it makes them feel that way. And so you try not to be that person. And I always try to draw back on those experiences and understand how it made me feel. And what benefit and what really, I guess the best way to say it is what impact it had on me being the best version of myself. And I always want to get the best version of my players.
You're not that far separated from Florida, Texas, Kentucky, Duke. All those experiences come to Miami. Miami, also a national brand.
Yeah, you know, and that's what made the job so appealing. Because it gave me the opportunity to continue what I felt I was best at. It gave me the ability to recruit nationally. It gave me the ability to have a big brand nationally and go out and everybody knows if you throw up the U or if you got the U on your shirt, everybody knows what it means. So it gave me the ability to still be able to recruit at the highest level. And that was one of the things that made it so appealing. And then also once you get down here and get around the community and the people in the university and see how much the city loves it. It's a special place.
Was there any aspect of this job where maybe you look at it, it's the University of Miami, and I think you know, you hear a lot about when assistants become head coaches, the number one thing is you evaluate the job, but any job, you make it a great job, or you make it the kind of job you want it to be. Is that one of the approaches that you had coming into Miami, that it's a very good job, but I can make it even a better job?
I would hope so. I would say I'm more so trying to bring it into this new wave of what college is. Mm-hmm. You know, and one thing also about the job was, you know, Coach L left a great foundation.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming off of Elite Eight and a Final Four 2-3 years ago before I got here. So you've seen what it's capable of and seeing what it can be. But also, kind of like you're saying, I felt like it was still a job where I could leave my imprint on it. Even though with all the great success that Coach L had, you know, it's not like it's a North Carolina or a Kentucky or a Duke or some blue blood. It's got this big daunting tradition and everything's already been taken care of. You know, I can still have an impact on my own.
Some fans probably want to know a little bit about Coach L and how he's observed the season, but it's been pretty interesting because I can watch him across the way, and I guess he's given you enough space, right? Is that, I don't know how people are, what you're supposed to expect, but he kind of just sits over there and watches the game, and if you need him, he's probably there, right?
You know, he's been great. He's been great. He has been so easy and so just receptive of me, and anything I ever need, I know I can go to him and ask. You know, he's not overbearing, which a lot of old coaches can be. And I don't mean to call him old. I mean to call him old as in he's not the coach anymore. But he can still be around and just kind of be a fan and observe. And if I need him, I can always reach out to him.
Wow. The ACC tournament. You as a head coach, how excited are you about coaching in the ACC tournament? This is the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah, this is what you coach for. This is what you live for if you're a basketball fan, a competitor, to get in March, to play in conference tournaments, to have the ability to play in March Madness. Like, this is what it's all about. And the ACC, with its history and its just prestige, is one of the best basketball conferences, if not the best basketball conference in history. So just the opportunity to compete for a championship here is impressive.
Has your dad told you a lot of war stories about the ACC? You know, in my day, we used to listen to the ACC games on the radio in school, and if you didn't win the ACC tournament, you weren't going to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no, he has. You know, he was one of those.
He was one of those, yeah.
They couldn't get past North Carolina State. But, you know, just the you know, just talk about all the players and all the great players that have played in the league and the rivalries when he was there, because, you know, Maryland's not in the ACC anymore. But back when it was the original ACC, and those, like, the different just, you know, going to play at Duke and Carolina and all those stories that he would talk about. So the ACC has been in my blood for ever since I can remember.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll continue. We'll have more with the University of Miami head coach Jay Lucas. Don't forget, on Thursday, Miami and either Louisville or SMU will be on the air at 2 o'clock here on FM 104.3 WQM. We'll continue with Coach Lucas right after this. All right, let me talk to you for a moment about Williamson Cadillac, Miami's luxury dealership, founded over 50 years ago. They're more than a dealership. They're our friends and neighbors. Williamson Cadillac has built a loyal client base by staying focused on the customer experience. Customers are treated like family by Ed Williamson, of course, his lovely wife, Carol. Go see Jermaine, former Hurricanes wide receiver. He'll get you all set up, and you can enjoy world-class customer service when you purchase a new Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac. And new vehicles are arriving daily, which means Williamson is absolutely going to have the new Cadillac you're looking for. If you want to experience Williamson Cadillac's preferred atmosphere, it's conveniently located on US 1 at 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto. Go online at WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Check out all of the inventory. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle and experience a new Cadillac from your luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac, Williamson is Miami.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Hurricane Hotline continues on FM 104.3 WQAM. Presented by Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
All right, happy to welcome you back in the Hurricane Hotline with University of Miami head coach Jay Lucas. Hurricanes playing in the ACC quarterfinals on Thursday, 2:30 tip-off, and just played Louisville, not, you know, last game of the season. That was a heck of a game, Coach. That was a great game.
Yeah, it was. It was a great game, and like we had told the guys the whole week, and it's just funny because we may end up playing one of the teams we just played. But, you know, SMU and Louisville were the closest thing, like the back-to-back, that having to win a championship and playing in a tournament, mm-hmm. And having to play and compete against really good teams. And I thought the game against Louisville was really like a conference or NCAA tournament game. Just one with the atmosphere, the fans were amazing. It was great. They played really good. They're a good team. And so just competing at that level and getting to understand it.
They came in, I think, really desperate.
Yeah.
They've been getting a lot of criticism in their hometown about not winning on the road and not beating good teams. So they seem to have played with a chip on their shoulder. But then you kind of knocked them sideways there and look like the game was there for you, but a bit of a scramble at the end.
It was. It was right there for us. You know, we lost the game early. We lost the game in probably the first 10 minutes. You know, we just didn't come out, like you're saying, with the to the level of the game, as I like to say it, with the desperation and with the just urgency that was needed to start the game, and they had it and they jumped on us. And then ever since then, we were always just trying to battle back. And then we closed out and we got the chance. We took the lead and just needed to get one more stop. But like I told the guys, you can't expect to win a game when you give up 46 points in both halves.
One of the things we talked about on the post game was you get to the postseason, a bad 5 or 10 minutes to end your season.
Yep, and that's exactly what these lessons and everything you're able to tell, and I was able to teach and hopefully get through to them going into this week, just because even here, like a bad 5 minutes, you're going home. And so just understanding that and playing with the intensity and the relentless just effort and energy that's needed at all times.
We're here in Charlotte. It does, to win the championship, you got to win 3 in 3 days.
Yep.
So that's a bit of a challenge. You're going to play great teams in all 3 games.
Yep, you will. You will. And just the, you know, a big part of it is just competing and not looking forward and just focusing on what's next and focusing on who your opponent is. And so once we find that out, whoever it is, SMU or Louisville, that's the most important thing. I think one of the things that gets you is you start to try to play matchmaker and things like that, but you still have to be in the moment, even though it's a little bit different.
It would appear that Sunday is going to be also a good day for you. I think it's pretty well known now. You take a look at all these projections and all that stuff. So it looks like you've earned yourself another tournament the following week. So next week could be, I would imagine Sunday and Monday become really hard nights.
Yeah, they right? do. They do. They do. Just because, one, you know, if everything continues to go as planned, like you're saying, you know, Sunday, the excitement of making it, and then the next step is just preparing for whoever you play and where you have to go. But you always want to give yourself an opportunity to compete for a national championship, and our guys and our program will be able to do that this year.
We mentioned you had these guys all from other major conferences, but they're playing in this one, the ACC tournament. They must look at it as a pretty unique opportunity as well.
Yeah, they do. They do, and I think just the way our guys are wired, this is something they're kind of wired for, you know, just these one-off games. You know, I think the way we're built, how we play, the physicality, the rebounding, the points in the paint, I feel like that's what carries over and gives you a chance to win in a tournament, live or go home type of situation, because those are the things that go into winning. And so hopefully we can come out here and execute. And I know the guys are excited. And it's always different when you play a team who's played before. They got a little bit more of a rhythm. And so we'll have to work our way into it as quick as we can.
Seems to me the formula that you have for this year is a good formula to have.
Yeah.
Is that something you recruit to now?
Yeah, it is. And we still have to tweak it because it's not exactly where I want it to be. You know, we of course need to get some more shooting and find ways to stretch the court that way. But I think having size and being big and having positional size is something that we'll always be and always have.
Did the ACC get back to a level where it should be?
Yeah, I feel it has. Now, you know, the influx of new coaches, like you just look at how they did. Ryan Odom at Virginia had a really good year. Will Wade turned around North Carolina State. I think they're projected to be a tournament team. Yeah. Luke Laux turned around Florida State halfway through the year in the conference. You know, they end up winning 10 games. And then, you know, Duke, Louisville, North Carolina, you know, those kind of blue blood schools stayed their sales. And then you had a bunch of really good teams that are fighting for their lives. You know, Virginia Tech's really good. Stanford had one of the best players in the country, one of the best freshmen in the country. So I thought the ACC really made a big jump, and you can tell by hopefully the amount of bids that we do get this year.
Do you ever have time during the season to peek at the other conferences, the SEC, the Big 12, the Big Ten, to see what's going on in those conferences?
Yeah, I'm a junkie, you know, so I watch a little bit of everything, and I like to kind of see what people doing and seeing how people are built and just kind of seeing, you know, where we are and what we need to get better at and how we need to work to the level to, you know, what is out there and what it looks like to compete for national championships and compete for conference championships. So I kind of watch a little bit of everybody.
You had some great teams in the postseason, being part of at Kentucky, at Duke. Does how does postseason play change? Because now, when you get to neutral courts, you have neutral referees and all of those things. Yeah. How does it change?
It changes. It changes because you play against different people with different styles. You say outside the ACC. You know, when you make it to the tournament, that changes because you're just playing, like you talked about, the refs. So they call it different, and everything's a little bit different. But kind of like I was saying earlier, I like how we're built, because we're built on things that go into winning no matter what. Like if you can control the glass, if you can get fouled more than your opponent, if you can score in the paint, if you can defend and get stops and get out and create offense off your defense, you always be in games. And I feel like we'll be able to do that.
You sort of had like an NBA team in that you had these two kids, Shelton and Dante. Then you had the men in Malik and Ernest and Trey.
Yeah.
How did the older guys help the younger guys?
You know, just you learn by just being around and building relationships and going through it and teaching and talking about it. And the older guys, what I will say about our older guys, they're giving our younger guys so much confidence. Just belief and having them believe in them and, you know, we'll be in the huddle and be like, no, run the play for Shelton, or we need to get Dante a look. So just little things like that I think adds up for those younger and the freshmen and giving those guys confidence. And it just helps them grow.
Anything about the way Trey and Malik played this year that surprised you? I know you recruited them, but once they got here, was there anything in their personality, the way they played, that you thought, man, this is better than I even thought?
No, I think the thing that I hope for, and part of the reason why bringing them here, is just the chip on their shoulders and their ability to feel like they've been forgotten about, or they feel like they haven't been appreciated in the basketball terms, not as people, but just basketball wise. And so that adds to their motivation to go out there and be all conference. And also just for us, you know, it's a big thing with where this new portal world is. You know, it's a big part of them coming here, and a big part of them being successful is that you can come to Miami and you can be who you were supposed to be. And you can be first team all conference, and you can be second team all conference as a 1-year transfer. Same with Ernest, you know, be all defensive team. You can still develop even though you only have 1 year left.
This portal thing, before I let you go, new portal thing around the country, some guys can go from place to place, right? Just go and play basketball. They're there, they play basketball, they get what they want or whatever they want to receive. But I think Miami's kind of unique because it can be more than just the basketball. If you play your cards right, I mean, it's a beautiful community. It seems to me that your kids are trying to get out more or be a part of the community, see what South Florida has to offer, which maybe down the road helps you in recruiting the portal.
Yeah, it does. And you know, for me, I still want them to have a college experience.
Yeah.
I don't want this to be, they still are student athletes. They still are a part of the student body at the University of Miami, and they're a part of the community. And so I want my program to always be a big part of the community. And so, you know, a big part of it is, one, we had great kids. So you go to football game, they're in the student section, they're just kind of out there.
Yeah.
You know, and we want that to be something that we are, because I do want them to enjoy their time here, and I want them to meet people that can help them and just grow their network that can benefit them for the rest of their life. You know, I was a person who went to a state school in the state I grew up in, and I know what it means and the relationships you build and the networking you have for when you're done. And you go back, and being able to go back and work at Texas and still have those relationships within Austin. Mm-hmm. And I want the same thing for my players in Miami.
Quick shout out before we go. I know you caught this, Bam Adebayo. Is it 84 points? 83 points?
83. One, it's unbelievable, because usually you have to, when you get 83, you got to make like 15 threes, 13 threes or something like that. You know, he got his from the free throw line. So it's just very impressive for Bam to be able to do that. And it's history. Second all-time highest scoring game behind Wilt's 100. And I'm a big Kobe fan, so it hurts a little bit. But Bam, I've gotten to meet Bam, been around him, great guy. So couldn't happen to a better person.
Happened in our town. Okay, quarterfinals on Thursday. The very best of luck. We'll talk to you before the game.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Zosie.
All right, that's University of Miami head coach Jay Lucas. We'll continue in the show right after.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This.
Time for more Hurricane Hotline on FM 104.3 WQAM. Presented by Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
All right, welcome back to the show. Time now to turn our attention to University of Miami football. Danny Rabinowitz joins us with Alex Dono.
All right, welcome back in here on Hurricane Hotline. Hollywood along with you. And it's my pleasure to bring in our friend Alex Dono. He is the host of the Locked on Canes podcast, the Locked on ACC podcast. Handles Hurricanes football postgame here on the station as well. Dono, good to talk to you again, my friend. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Exciting times. Recruiting is picking up in football. Spring ball is going to start in the next couple weeks. Basketball postseason run getting underway. ACC and NCAA tournaments. This is a great time to be a Miami fan.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You mentioned spring football right around the corner, and it is. And it feels like we just finished the season. It feels like we were just playing in that that national championship game. Boy, it is a quick turnaround. And I know that the calendar doesn't necessarily benefit teams that that play late into the year. Has that had any impact on the roster construction? And I know you've come out with your depth chart already for this Canes football team. Has that had any impact on anything?
Yeah, it did have an impact. You know, Miami was able to end up with a really strong transfer portal class, but the calendar made that a lot more difficult, Hollywood, because when the transfer portal opened originally, I think it was around January 5th, if I'm not mistaken, you know, Miami was in the thick of their playoff run. And, you know, Coach Cristobal, and I, you know, I'm going to say it worked out because Miami ended up winning three playoff games and got all the way to the national championship. They put a lot of their portal work on the back burner until, you know, the end parts of that playoff run, because they were able to get like a good chunk of time between, I think, between the Ole Miss game and the championship game. So they were able to do some more transfer portal visits and stuff. But I think they made a conscious effort not to have too many visitors coming through between the first few playoff games, because the turnarounds were quicker for some of those. And so I think it did. It really affected their ability to fully commit to the transfer portal. And despite that, they ended up with the a top five transfer portal class regardless. And then, you know, they pulled a rabbit out of their hat with Darian Mensa very late in the process. But it definitely, you know, I guess your reward for having a great run through the postseason is it makes it a lot tougher to build your roster for the upcoming year. The calendar is an absolute mess. And then, you know, another part to that, Hollywood, is there's no spring transfer portal this year. The last few years, you've had another window in April. They got rid of that. But then the NCAA is really concerned that schools are basically going to be manipulating and kind of backdooring players anyway. Like, the term that people are using for that is the shadow portal, that you're going to have guys like unenrolling from their school to enroll somewhere else. So in order to combat the shadow portal, the NCAA is proposing these crazy penalties because they can't really punish players. We've established that, and they figured it out. So they're actually going to start punishing coaches by, you know, suspending coaches for up to 6 games and these big monetary fines if you bring players in outside the transfer portal. I guess my question is, does the NCAA really have the power to enforce anything? Because lately, when they try to actually punish schools, coaches, players for stuff, they usually just take an L in court. So I don't know if there's going to be a shadow portal or not, but that's something to watch out for in about a month.
Well, first things first, the shadow portal is a very cool name. All right, that's, you know, pretty cool. Whoever thought of that did a nice job. It's funny you bring that up. We were talking about that the other day. And yeah, the NCAA seems essentially powerless at this point. I think the only case I've ever seen them win was against that Alabama basketball player who was in the G League for 3 years and decided to go back to college. He still got a few games in there before they got him out of there. But it seems like they're powerless. And then at the end of the day, you know, don't the conferences, you know, at least the top conferences, have enough pull where they can just tell the NCAA to, you know, kind of go kick rocks?
Yeah, I'm surprised there haven't been serious discussions already of that happening. I guess the only thing that's holding that back is, you know, the NCAA, they're basically powerless when it comes to the revenue sports now. They don't have the type of influence over football and basketball and maybe in some cases baseball. But I think maybe the reason why the power conferences haven't broken away yet is the NCAA is pretty, I think they're pretty helpful in managing the Olympic type sports and the non-revenue sports and, you know, Title IX and everything. Because if the Power Four were to completely break away and it turns into like pure profit capitalism, then the PR of basically like discarding all the women's sports would be pretty bad, I think.
So maybe
that's one of the few things that's kind of holding that back from happening. But it would not surprise me if that happens eventually, because, you know, they, like, to me, it's like, why are you paying this middleman of the NCAA and they're going to try to punish you for stuff when they're not really making you any money? They're just sort of standing in your way. I think at some point, and I'm sure I'm oversimplifying the situation with the way I described that, but I think at some point it would not surprise me if there is a breakaway.
And one of the other things you mentioned there, Darian Mensa, of course, the new quarterback at the University of Miami, and you brought this up too. He did transfer in late. It was a late addition, and I think a lot of people were wondering where Miami was going to go at the quarterback position. Was Miami, Donna, from your understanding, were they basically all in on Mensa? And if they didn't get him, was there a backup plan of some kind? Or, you know, because again, it was late in the process there. You wonder if they were sort of all in on him.
Yeah, at that point in time, I don't know who the backup plan could have been, because, you know, most every clear upgrade at quarterback had already signed somewhere else by that point. I mean, Miami shot their shot with Brendan Sorsby out of Cincinnati. And going back to what I said earlier The calendar really affected that because Sorsby wanted to make a decision really quickly, and Miami didn't want to host any visits right away because of the playoff run. So maybe he would have ended up at Texas Tech anyway because his girlfriend transferred there. So I'm not saying Miami for sure would have gotten him, but they didn't even get him in for a visit because he wanted to make a quick decision there. So they shot their shot with Sorsby. They shot their shot with Sam Levitt, and it seemed like that one was really close. But then, you know, Lane Kiffin went like full stalker mode and intercepted him at the airport, and he got Levitt to LSU. Miami even tried to, convince reportedly Ty Simpson from Alabama not to enter the NFL draft. They missed out on that one. So like, I think it worked out well. I think Mensah, to me, probably a better fit at Miami than most, if not all, of those other names I mentioned. But if it wasn't him, I think plan B would have been Luke Nickell, maybe, who's already on the roster. Like, I don't think there was really another option from outside the program at that point.
Is that essentially how a homegrown quarterback is going to find a job here at Miami, where, you know, the Canes, I guess, eventually strike out in the portal, which they have not up to this point? I mean, they've been able to land everyone they've wanted, right? From Cam to Carson and now Darian. Is that the only way, you know, if you come into Miami as a freshman quarterback, that you're going to get a chance to play, you know, either an injury or you know, Miami just kind of strikes out?
Maybe, but not necessarily. I think that they're going to have, you know, through every practice this year, you know, spring's going to be starting up in a couple weeks, probably March 24th, and then you've got fall camp and they've got to be evaluating the young guys. And I think they're going to have to make, you know, 10 months from now, a conscious decision as to whether they need to keep doing it this way. Because I think, you know, the way that they've been getting guys out of the portal the last few years, you've gotten, you know, quarterbacks that were obviously, you know, in the top percentile. You know, Cam Ward ended up being a number one pick. Carson Beck is going to be an NFL quarterback soon. And I would imagine Darian Mensah has first round NFL draft potential. But I think at a certain point, you have to start to wonder if the guys that you've been recruiting the last couple of years are good enough. Because I, you know, if you're asking me, is Darian Mensah an upgrade over, you know, Emery Williams, who did transfer out to ECU, but that was like your next guy in line, I say 1,000% yes, you're better off with Darian Mensah, right? But, you know, these last couple of recruiting cycles, you know, Luke Nickell was a four-star and a multi-time state champion coming out of a big high school in Georgia. You know, I think they probably like him more than a lot of the quarterbacks they recruited over the past, you know, previous 5 years or so. Darion Coleman, who's coming in as a true freshman out of Jones High in Orlando, has got really special arm talent. And we'll see who they land in the upcoming 2027 class. There's a couple good quarterbacks on the radar. So it's like, quarterback recruiting seems to be improving at Miami. So I do wonder, like, and they're going to have to decide if they don't think, you know, Nickell and Coleman are better than what they could get in the portal. That's going to be a decision to make. But I think at some point, Hollywood, when they're recruiting that position group a little bit better over the last couple of years, they're going to really have to think long and hard over, is it worth it to keep going to the portal every year, or do we have enough already in the program?
Yeah, I mean, it just, like, to me, it felt like the veteran leadership of Carson Beck was a huge difference maker this season. And I think that really comes into play, you know, when you start the season, right, and you played that Notre Dame game, and it was a high level game. And I thought the two quarterbacks, you had a freshman on the Notre Dame side that had very few starts, right? And then you had, you know, Carson Beck, who had the experience. I thought that played a role there. And then clearly in the playoff, I thought Carson's decision making and the way that he managed games was one of the keys to Miami making their run through that postseason. One of the obvious keys that Miami has gone to has been the trenches. We know that Coach Cristobal wants to build through the offensive line. The defensive line with Jason Taylor has been exceptional as well. Dono, with that being said, there are a handful of guys who are going to get their names called early on in the draft. So let's start with the offensive line. What has Miami done to solidify that line and to replace the pieces that they'll be missing?
Yeah, you're looking at probably four new starters on the O-line, or maybe you could say three if you kind of consider like Samson Okunlola and Matthew McCoy to kind of have been co-starters last year. I think they're both going to be starters this coming season. But, you know, you're replacing James Brockermeyer at center. You're replacing Markel Bell at left tackle. You're replacing Francis Maui-Noah, who's, you know, one of the best offensive linemen that's come through this program in a very long time. And it's not going to be easy. But a couple things, actually, I talked about this on a recent episode of Locked On Canes. You know, usually when you look at any program that comes off a good year on the offensive line, and if they have to replace three or four starters, that's usually a red flag. But Miami's in a unique situation for two reasons. Number one, you're replacing 4- and 5-star caliber guys with other 4- and 5-star caliber guys. I mean, the quality of recruiting that Miami, they've got dudes, they've got creatures on that offensive line. You know, to be able to potentially plug in a guy like Jackson Cantwell, you know, as a first year phenomenon, and, you know, players like McCoy and Samson Okunlola is probably going to be a full time starter for the first time this year. It's a former 5-star recruit a few years ago who waited patiently for his opportunity. So you've got like an uncommon group of just creatures there. And then when it comes to offensive line coaching, Alex Mirabal is very unique with the way he's able to really help his players build chemistry quickly. He has this 5-men, 1-mind mentality where you try to get your entire group on the same page. He's been very successful there. Your head coach is a second offensive line coach, essentially, with Mario Cristobal. And they kind of have a third offensive line coach this year, Hollywood, because the new tight ends coach, Mike Vitti, who was the former O-line coach at Army, he's going to be coaching Miami's tight ends. And this guy, you know, 2 years ago had his offensive line at Army first, not only the first service academy, but the first non-Power 4 school to ever win the prestigious Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in college football. So you also have another ear to lend to that group with your tight ends coach this year. So I think they're going to be in pretty good shape there. I think the guys to watch, you know, I mentioned Cantwell is a big one to watch. Okunlola, Markel Bell. You know, you look at center, could possibly be Ryan Rodriguez in his sixth year, or Max Buchanan heading into his second year is a guy that everybody really raves about. And even another one of the true freshmen, Ben Congdon, I think has been looking really good and playing well. So it's going to be a young group, but the talent is certainly going to be there. And hopefully you can keep that running game moving consistently with all the talent you have. And then when it comes to protecting Darian Mensah, I guess the good thing about Mensah versus Carson Beck is he's got more of that mobility within the pocket to extend plays. So, like, you want to have a clean pocket as much as possible, but I think Darian Mensah will be a little bit less reliant on a clean pocket than Carson Beck will be. It's just going to give your offensive line a little bit more room for error.
And then on the defensive side, Dono, I mean, obviously, we know the names that are going. Reuben Bay and Akeem Ezidor could hear their names called very high in this draft. How does Miami replace those guys on the defensive line? And you talk about production. Those guys had, I mean, especially Reuben Bay had about as good a playoff as any player had.
I think you replace them by committee. It would be disingenuous of me to say that anybody on your defensive line is as good as Reuben Bain was here. I mean, he was generational, or as good as Akeem Mezidor, who's going to be a first or a second round pick. But I do think you're going to see more of a rotation with really talented guys. Because one thing you'll notice about Reuben Bain last year, he didn't leave the field very much. Like, he played a ton of reps, because he's the type of guy where if you call for him to be subbed out, he'll wave you off and say, "No, coach, I'm staying in the game." That's just who Reuben Bain is. Now they did get a proven transfer in Damon Wilson, who is a former, you know, he's been in college in the SEC for a few years. He played at Mizzou last year, had 9 sacks and 54 pressures, which is really good. Was at Georgia before then, so he looks like he's going to be your alpha Wilson. You know, if you get 9 sacks in the SEC, you should be able to do pretty well in the ACC, in my opinion. But then, you know, you also have kind of a rotation of other guys with a lot of talent. Marquise Lightfoot played a lot last year, kind of as the Akeem Mezidor understudy. Hayden Lowe is someone who was injured all of last year. And I thought, based on the way he was practicing, Hollywood, I thought Hayden Lowe, when he was a true freshman last year, would be able to get into the rotation. But he suffered, you know, an ACL like right before the season started, which is awful timing. But he's back, I think, to full strength now. Armando Blunt has played really well when he's gotten opportunities. So it's like, I think you're going to see more of a rotation this year, which is not a bad thing. And I also... I think the interior is probably going to be even better than it was last year because Ahmad Moten Sr. comes back for another year. So he was great last year. Now he's even more experienced. And Justin Scott, who was kind of like the first guy off the bench last year, played tremendously. I think he's ready to step into a full-time role. So they're probably losing a little bit at defensive end, but I think the defensive tackle spot might be even better this year than it was last year.
Well, certainly a lot of interesting stuff to look for when spring football rolls around. Make sure, Dono, you download the Locked On Canes and Locked On ACC podcast. Give us a quick plug. Let us know where we can find those, Dono.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you can check out Locked On Canes. It's on all the podcast platforms, including Odyssey. You can find us on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, on YouTube every single day. And I know, Hollywood, you're really excited for the ACC tournament for hoops coming up. I thought our guy Jay Lucas got snubbed for Coach of the Year. It's like, I mean, if you're just going to give it to the coach of the best team, then Shire can just win the award every single year, I guess. I thought Lucas deserved more love there. But yeah, check out Locked On Canes wherever you get your podcasts. We're talking a lot of football. We talk some basketball this time of year as well.
Dono, sounds good. Thank you so much for the time. And again, if you are a Canes fan, you must check out the Locked On Canes and Locked On ACC podcast. Of course, with spring football right around the corner, lots of stuff that Alex Dono will be getting to. Thank you for the time, Dono.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much to Alex Dono and Danny Rabinowitz, along with University of Miami head coach Jay Lucas. Our producer has been Trevor Harris. We'll join you tomorrow, 2:00, Hurricanes quarterfinal action right here on WQAM. Have a very pleasant good evening.
Hey guys, this is Matt Norlander, co-host of the Eye on College Basketball podcast with Gary Parrish. We are part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, and college hoops is turning toward what's going to be a phenomenal March. So be sure you are tuned into the show. We're going to be publishing at least 4 shows every week. Follow and listen to Eye on College Basketball free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. March is coming.